great. It feels great, honestly. We really needed that after those 7 games in a row, and you know, especially the way we did it, we really nail biter, but it felt good.
It did feel good. I have to completely agree with Mr. Daniel Audette, who is who you just heard there, talking about the fact that the Laval Rocket are finally back in the win column. They're the beginning of a new winning streak, and it did feel great, and it felt great. Our Rocket Sports team was in the building that night, and the energy was magnificent. We are going to talk about it today. Welcome to another edition of From the Press Box. I'm your host, the lead correspondent here at the AHL Report, Amy Johnson, and we've got lots on tap for you today, lots to review from over the weekend as we were on the road with the Laval Rocket, both in Syracuse on Friday night and in Lehigh Valley against the Phantoms on Saturday. And of course, I'm joined every week by my marvelous co-host, Mr. Rick Stevens. So thank you so much for being here.
Always glad to be here. And we've got lots to cover and exciting stuff as always. So let's get to it.
Absolutely. So we'll start with what Dan Audette was just saying, and that is the fact that the Rocket won in glorious fashion on Saturday night. You know, they had been, as he said, on a 7-game skid. They're six before they played in Syracuse on Friday night. The prior 6 games that they played, they only scored 2 goals in each of those games, and I'm pretty sure all but one of those games they lost 3-2, many of them in the shootout or overtime. And then on Friday night in Syracuse, they could only muster 1 goal against, and that was late in the game. So for them to come back and win 4-3 in overtime on Saturday night, Rick, was just a really enormous deal for this team.
Absolutely. And the odd thing is they aren't playing poorly. It's just things weren't coming together. And, you know, that it was a really well-played hockey game on Friday night in Syracuse. Syracuse was particularly aggressive, and as they are coached to be. And Laval had some trouble creating chances. With that, having said that, you know, their goaltending on both ends was very good. Charlie Lindgren in net for the Rocket. And it was not until the, as you said, the late stages, Chris Terry, a power play goal. I believe at that point it was a 6-on-3. It was a 2-man advantage on the power play, and then they pulled the goaltender. And it looked like at that point they had the momentum. New arrival, Adam Cracknell, took an unfortunate penalty to kind of halt that, and they were left with the loss on that day. But came back and played another, and again, both teams played well on Saturday. Both Lehigh Valley and Laval played very well, a very closely fought game. But it was really, really important for the Rocket to get a victory, leaving Allentown that day.
Absolutely, and there were some moments in that game where it really felt like, oh no, here we go again. Michael McNiven got the start in Lehigh Valley on Saturday night, and it was Teddy Bear Toss night at the Phantoms, and they scored their first goal on McNiven about a minute and a half into the game. So While Lefebvre said after the game, well, it's, you know, always good to get the Teddy Bear Toss out of the way early so that the guys can then just focus on the game ahead, wasn't the way they wanted to start the game. And then in the third period, the Phantoms were actually up 3-1 on Laval. And that's when, you know, you kind of felt the collar getting a little tight. It was, oh, here we go again. Is this going to be another 3-2? And Jeremy Gregoire actually in the final 10 seconds of regulation tied it up to force overtime. And Adam Cracknell, newcomer on the team, had 2 goals on the night, and including the overtime winner. So it was quite something to see. In fact, here's what Cracknell had to say about getting that win on Saturday night, even though it was just his second game with the team.
But it wasn't going to happen in the first period. It was about building the process and sticking within our game. We were down, and we found a way to come back in the last 17 seconds and then capitalize in overtime. So that dressing room in there was excited all game, positive. We just knew we were going to win that game. We had a positive feeling about it, and guys stuck together and made the plays they had to.
And he's exactly right there, Rick. You know, they made the plays that they had to. I'm just going to play a quick comment here from Sylvain Lefebvre as well, just on what it meant. You know, the previous night in Syracuse, I asked a very simple question of, okay, here's another. It's the seventh loss in a row. What's the game plan going into a very tough Lehigh Valley team tomorrow night? And he said, the game plan at this point is just that we need a win. We got to find a way to do it. And so once they won on Saturday night, here's what Sylvain Lefebvre had to say.
It felt like you needed a perfect game to win a hockey game. And you know what? The meetings today was just about, you know, having the right mindset and, think positively and visualizing ourselves, you know, with our arms up, you know, at the end of the game. But having said that, you know, it was a good team effort. It was, contributions from a lot of people.
And Rick, it was really exciting to see. I mean, the guys poured off the bench in overtime when Cracknell scored that game winner. It almost felt like a playoff win. I mean, they just surrounded him on the ice up against the glass, and it was, you could see the weight lift off their shoulders heading back for a homestand this week.
Hockey's just an amazing game. There were so many stories within the story in this game. You know, you heard Sylvain Lefebvre said he went through a visualization exercise. They prepare, arms raised, and then just a minute and a half in, Matt Reed scores, and the teddy bears come raining down
right
around McNiven and the Lavelle bench, and a significant delay while they cleaned up 5,000 bears off the ice surface. And a team could just be gutted by something like that.
Yeah,
and instead,
absolutely.
Instead, they weren't. And then being down 3-1 and less than 5 minutes left, and there's this new guy. You've traded out Holland. Peter Holland had been a very productive with Lavelle, 18 points in 20 games, and you've brought in this guy who's known for his leadership skills, bit of a plumber, and he has 3 points to his season, and Cracknell scores the game that gets them a chance to tie it, with less than 4 minutes left. Gregoire scores with less than 20 left, or 10 seconds left, I guess. And then Cracknell scores again in overtime. He gets 2 goals. He only had one coming in. Just an incredible, hockey's incredible game, incredible story, and just the lift that gave the team for that bus ride back from Allentown to Montreal must have been incredible.
And I know it would have been a long one. After having made that trip myself last weekend, they probably had about an 8-hour ride home to celebrate, which if it had gone the other way, that would have been a painfully long bus ride home. You mentioned Adam Cracknell. We actually had a chance to speak with him a couple of times this weekend. And the one thing that you mentioned about Cracknell coming in is he's known for his leadership abilities. And here's what Sylvain Lefebvre had to say about just that with Adam Cracknell.
A guy like, you know, Cracknell, I think brings that, you know, the no quit and the good leadership and working in the right direction and doing things the right way, and guys follow him.
And when we asked, we spoke more at length with Adam on Friday night after his first game and their loss in Syracuse. And he's played in the NHL. He's played a lot of games in the NHL. And so like everybody else, he's looking for a way back into the NHL, but understands that there's a process. And this is what he had to say about his arrival with the Laval Rocket.
You know, this is where it starts. I've started here before. I know what it takes to get back, and want to support my teammates as much as possible. And you know, we use each other to be successful, especially the young guys. They got to know what it takes to get there, and I'm going to do anything I can to help them get to that next level.
Now that, Rick, is what I think was our first indication of what a great addition to this team Adam Cracknell is going to be. He starts that statement off by talking about, I've done this before. I know what it takes to get back to the NHL. I know the work that I have to put in. But in the same breath, talks about not himself, but helping the other younger players on the team also realize that dream. And I found that to be really impressive. And as we spoke with him more and more over the course of the weekend, this is going to be a very, very big mentoring, leadership, character addition to the locker room, I think.
Let's be honest. Everybody wants to get to every one of those players on both sides want to get to the NHL. And there's a number of different ways you can do it. You can feel entitled. I don't belong. Mm-hmm. I don't belong here. I should be in the NHL, and I'm just biding my time. What we heard from Nicholas Deslauriers early on.
Right.
There's the I'm going to selfishly do everything I can to make the team. Or there's Adam Cracknell's kind of view, and we've heard it before. These are my guys. These are my
right.
guys, and I'm going to do everything possible to help them reach their dream. And in doing that, might happen for me too. But I'm completely invested in this team. And I'm completely invested in every single one of those guys in the locker room. And that's the kind of attitude that is a little bit rare. And you can see why, despite the disparity in the stat lines, why Laval wanted to go out and bring this kind of player to their team.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked him to expand more on, you know, taking that mentoring role and whether that's something he embraces or not. And if you recall, he emphatically said yes. In fact, he said, you know, I'm the oldest guy on this team, apparently. He said he got a little harassed about that when he first walked into the dressing room, but all in good fun, of course. And he said, you know, his success coming up through the ranks wouldn't have been possible without older players taking him under their wing, and that it's very important for him to turn around and do the same thing for younger players on his team as well. So that's a really encouraging kind of preview of what Adam Cracknell is going to bring. And if he keeps bringing games like he played on Saturday night and helping in really clutch situations, I think people are going to be talking about Adam Cracknell a lot more than they thought they were going to be 3 days ago.
Yeah, you're right. And it's, you know, we talked about, this losing streak. They struggled in some areas. The power play wasn't quite what it was, what had been earlier in the season. And there was, you know, some defensive breakdowns, and there was this and that, but generally they were playing well, but there was a missing ingredient. There was a real missing ingredient. And, I'm not saying that Cracknell's the solution, but I think
right.
that he'll go a long way to filling a need that wasn't there. And you know, we talked that the Rocket, as far as their leadership, even their leadership team that was chosen. A little later than the start of the season, but we have Fraze up with Montreal. He is the captain.
Right.
And Holland was wearing an A and as kind of a substitute there. He's out. and traded to the New York organization. Chris Terry is still got his A, and Terramina has his, but there was an opening for some leadership and,
sure.
And maybe Cracknell's it.
I like it so far. I like it so far. There were some other additions. I don't want to say additions, but some returning faces. You know, not just Adam Cracknell as a new face in the lineup on Friday night, but some returning faces finally hit the ice this week as well. Noah Juulsen returned to the ice last Wednesday, so Friday in Syracuse was his second game on the ice, and Marcus Eisenschmidt was back from injury as well. Finally playing again. His first game was Friday night in Syracuse. And let's just take a listen here. We spoke with Juulsen and Eisenschmidt on what it means to both of them to be playing again and getting healthy and back on the ice. And we'll start with Noah Juulsen and then move right into Marcus Eisenschmidt.
Yeah, it feels good for sure. You know, it's been a while for me getting back here, getting healthy, and getting back on ice with the team. So, you know, I'm happy to be back out here, but we gotta turn things around here for sure.
It's never easy. I didn't think it was easier at all. It was at first it was a tough breakdown for me again, being injured again, being out again, having to go through all that again. But I knew the process from the last 2 years, and I knew I had to push through it. I had to do it, and that's why I'm standing here today, feeling good after the game.
And I loved hearing that from Marcus Eisenschmidt. That's why I'm standing here today, feeling good after a game. And you could tell, even though it was a tough loss, he was still smiling a bit because you could just see that he felt good and he was happy to be back on the ice. And so was Juulsen. I mean, Juulsen hasn't played a game all season, Rick, and he looked like he hadn't missed a beat whatsoever. I mean, he's right back where we were used to seeing him at his level of play. But Eisenschmidt looked equally good out there on the ice. I think having those two back in the lineup is going to be a huge boon to this team.
Eisenschmidt, took some time in the first period to get his legs under him, but after that, he brought a ton of energy. He was creating scoring chances. He was a bit feisty.
He was skating
well. I thought he looked really good. And on Saturday, he was having to fill in with Michael McCarron out of the lineup due to injury. And maybe we'll probably touch on that later. But I was surprised that he was able to contribute so quickly to the energy of the team as
yeah.
well with Juulsen. We saw it last year when he just stepped into the lineup in the playoffs, like it was in his
like
first
it was
pro
nothing.
Game,
yeah.
like it was nothing. I don't know how he does it. And
I don't know how
again.
He does it either.
It's a credit to his talent, his hockey IQ, his vision, that he steps in and you know with Juulsen he was just solid. It was you know the Ice Caps had been in their own end, had some problems earlier in the season, just like the Canadians did with wide open passing lanes, and you saw that Juulsen had really good stick in the games that he played, was disrupting the opponents. Intended passes in their zone. He was just really good, really solid. Both of them contributed right away, and particularly with the win on Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. In fact, I can recall there was a point in Friday night's game in Syracuse that I turned and said in the middle of the game up in the press box, my goodness, I could just watch Noah Juulsen play hockey all day, every day. He stands out on the ice. He really does. And just makes it look so easy. He's just one of those players that makes it look so easy, and he's so smooth, knows right where to be. He can cause turnovers, especially along the boards, and in the neutral zone, like you wouldn't believe. just really impressed. And Mark is the same way, just going to that next level with him. And when he stays healthy, I think it's just going to be, you know, he's had a couple of setbacks over the last couple of years, which I'm sure has been a struggle for him, as he kind of spoke about in that soundbite there. But if he can stay healthy and just keep progressing, I think big things are coming from Marcus Eisenschmidt for sure. There was one quote from Sylvain Lefebvre that I did want to share. You had a great question for him regarding, you know, Saturday night was a big win for Laval, but it was also a very big win up with the big club in Montreal. They had just a couple of goals happen up there that evening. Ten or so. And some of the guys that were really contributing that night, Jacob Delarose, Charles Soudan, Dan Carr, all products of Sylvain Lefebvre, and you know, whether they were formerly with the Ice Caps or even in Carr's case, call up from the Rocket. And you asked Sylvain what that really means to him as the coach to see his guys not only either making the roster with the big club or getting called up, but really contributing. And this is what he had to say about that.
It's always good to see. You know, it's fun. You know, it's a good night for the organization tonight. And when you get 2 points, that's what matters. You know, but it's nice to see, you know, our guys getting points up and helping the team win. You know, they're in a good run right now, and that's great to see.
You could tell he was proud, you know, and he has always said that he's, you know, he's very happy for his players when they get the call to go up to the NHL, and that he wants them to stay as long as they can and be successful. And you could see that when you asked him that on Saturday.
Their role as coaches is that of a teacher. And when you have success with your pupils, you can't help but be proud. And even though, as I said to him, his focus is with the Rocket, his head is there, his heart must have some pride for the alums that have moved on and that had a big night on Saturday against Detroit. Every single one of them that you mentioned had a multi-point game and looked very good doing so.
Absolutely. Wishing them all continued success there. We will mention, as you kind of touched on earlier, there was one injury that happened this weekend. Mike McCarron went down on Friday night in Syracuse in the second period. He had a bit, you know, it was a little unsure at first is exactly what happened. Noticed he had a collision along the far boards with an opponent. And when it happened, he dropped his stick immediately. His hand went up to his left ear. He skated directly over to Glenn Kinney, the athletic trainer on the bench, who then put a towel to his head and sent him straight off to the dressing room. And as it turns out, he did take a skate blade to his left ear. He was rushed to the hospital apparently on Friday night, where he had emergency surgery. He was at practice today, according to our friend Raphael Doucette from 91.9 Sports. He was at practice today, but watching practice from the stands. And according to Raphael, from his report from Sylvain Lefebvre, after practice today, McCarron will not play this week. There's a possibility that he will play next weekend when the team travels to Charlotte to take on the Checkers, but they just don't want to risk any infection to his ear, so they're going to keep him out for this week. So and that the report from Raphael was also that for now they're staying with their 12 forwards and not calling anyone up from Brampton, but we'll of course wait to see if that changes as the week goes on. And speaking of as the week going on, not an easy week. It's you know, we talked about how they needed that momentum, especially being on a 7-game skid. They really needed that win on Saturday, not just for morale, but they need that confidence boost coming into this week. They've got some tough opponents and a tough week ahead. Here's what Sylvain Lefebvre had to say about the game plan coming into this week.
Yeah, especially Bingo coming in. You know, we played two games already against them. We won the first one. It was a crazy game. I think the final was 7-6 or something like that. And then we lost the second one where, you know, they played, you know, a really good game. And I think they have a better team than the record shows right now. And they're a team that plays really hard along the boards and also, you know, deep in the, on the forecheck. And you know, they're good at protecting the puck. So we're going to have to play, you know, good hockey, and especially, you know, coming back at home, like you said. And then we got Toronto twice on the weekend. So, and we all know that Toronto has a really good team. So, you know, our work is, you know, is not done here. So we... You know, we need to get some rest. And
so they know they have quite the challenge ahead of them this week, Rick. But I think they're up for it. I think Saturday night's win will have given them a lot of jump and a lot of energy, and I think they'll be ready for Bingo tomorrow night.
And they should be, because the temptation is always to you know, the Marlies are the traditional rival. They got two games against them. They know that the Marlies are already a dozen points ahead of them in the, or thereabouts, mm-hmm. in the standings, and Marlies being, you know, along with the Manitoba Moose, the kind of the class of the league this season. So the temptation is to look ahead to those games, and you don't want to do that with Binghamton.
No,
and,
it's not a given.
Yeah, they need to win and win decisively against the Devils to continue on that momentum that they created with the overtime win and will help them with their games against the Marlies.
And the Rocket have their own teddy bear toss coming up this week. Their first teddy bear toss in Laval. It's on Friday night against the Marlies. And so that should be fun for the team and for fans as well. However, I'm a little curious to see how that's going to go down, because it just pulls me right into, you know, the world of hockey has been kind the last 2 weeks and the last two episodes. I have not had to launch into wanting Amy's rants of the week, but we're going to revisit a rant this week. We're going to revisit it pretty hard. And it goes along with the teddy bear toss. Well, just tossing things on ice in general. I don't know, like hats for hat tricks. We were in Allentown on Saturday night. The PPL Center had their teddy bear toss. Lehigh Valley Phantoms fans, the place was packed. There was more than 8,000 people there. Tickets are not, you know, Canadian Bell Center prices, of course, to go to an AHL game, but they're not cheap either. Parking, food, all that kind of stuff. 8,000 people there. There was a total of almost 5,000 teddy bears that were thrown on the ice that night. Now, if you go an hour down the highway to Hershey, which is the AHL affiliate of the Washington Capitals, where the Hershey Bears play, the Hershey Bears had their teddy bear toss night on Sunday, I believe. And the Giant Center, where they play at Hershey Park, I don't think, I haven't looked at their attendance numbers for that night, but I doubt that there was 8,000 people there. So let's even say that there were 8,000 people there, the same as what was at the PPL Center. I'm going to say there was probably maybe 7,000. Those 7,000 or so people threw more than 25,000 stuffed animals. 25,000 stuffed animals onto the ice for their annual teddy bear toss. So take what we had. If anybody can go back and look at the highlights from the Rocket and Phantoms game, which we have on our recap from that night on the AHL.report website. If you go to the recap from that game and look at the video highlights, you'll see the teddy bear toss. Take the amount of stuffed animals that are on the ice there and multiply that by 5 with less people in the stands. And that's what the folks out in Hershey, Pennsylvania could come up with. Any AHL rink you go into, if there's a hat trick, hats are raining down like you would not believe. I mean, all about, it's part of being a fan, whether it's teddy bear toss night, whether it's a hat trick, whether it's just throwing things on ice, on the ice in general, because it's a tradition with your team. And in the NHL, I'm sorry, I hate to break it to all of the people who live in Quebec, or who some of it's people who don't even live in Quebec, but I hate to break it to you, the tradition of throwing hats for a hat trick is not on its death knell. In fact, so Saturday night, you mentioned that there were just a few or so, like 10 goals in the Canadiens Detroit game, and three of those goals were scored by Paul Byron. I think that was Paul Byron's first career hat trick. Correct me if I'm wrong. But Paul Byron scores a hat trick. This is a team who has been, let's be honest, has been sucking for most of the season until recently, until Carey came back and they righted the ship a bit. And you've got a guy who scores a hat trick. And you know what happens? Do you know what happens in the Bell Center, which is packed to the rafters, which with quote unquote passionate, ravenous hockey fans? One hat and one toque is all that the folks in the Bell Center could muster. One hat and one toque. I mean, hell, there's a guy who's a Red Wings fan sitting in the stands at the Bell Center, and when the Red Wings finally break Carey's shutout and score one goal after 2.5 periods of sitting there with an octopus in his pants, throws that on the ice. But God forbid we throw a hat for it to celebrate the player who just scored three goals in one game. And you want to take this even further for me. Not only am I just disgusted by that and just, I'm sorry, you're not a true hockey. I don't care how much my tickets cost. I don't care how much the hat on my head is. If I am in an arena and somebody on my team scores a hat trick, that hat's going on the ice. It is part of the experience. It is part of the passion of being a hockey fan. At that point, you are more concerned about being wrapped up and fully engaged in the game. You are not concerned about the dollar signs about the stupid hat that you're wearing. To add insult to injury on top of this, I mean, it's insane to me that I have to go off about this twice in the matter of like a month. To add insult on injury and rub salt in the wound, then what I could not believe was that for the couple of days following that, the apologist, I don't know, brainstorming that was going on Twitter and on social media about it's expensive to go to hockey games and hats and merchandise are really expensive now. Nobody says that you have to wear a $50 hat to a frickin' hockey game. Grab a disgusting old toque that's in the back of your closet somewhere to take along with you in case somebody scores a hat trick that you don't care about throwing on the ice. Then you see people like, you know, I have tons of respect for John Liu and his hockey coverage and analysis, and so this is separate than that. But He he's not the only one. I saw multiple people with multiple ideas like this that were just absolutely mind-boggling to me. Here's what he tweeted after he saw so many people whining about the lack of hats being thrown. He says, "I have a suggestion to the Canadians for fans to celebrate future hat tricks. Make a practice of selling low-cost mini Habs hats at Centre Bell for a modest donation to the Canadiens Children's Foundation. Fans can throw the hats onto the ice and underprivileged kids would benefit." He then goes on to say, "For further incentive, number the hats like a raffle, and the player who scores the hat trick then draws a hat from the pile and the fan with the matching stub wins an autographed jersey or stick from said player." I mean, okay, great on the creativity, but that's not what a hat trick is. We shouldn't have to work this hard. We shouldn't have to work this hard for fans to feel so engaged in their team and their players and their hockey team to not just rip the hat off their head and without even thinking throw it onto the ice. There are people who throw, obviously in Detroit, they throw octopi. People throw jerseys. People throw jerseys on the ice when they're ticked off at their team. Toronto. A jersey costs a lot more than a hat does. People have thrown rats on the ice. People have thrown sharks on the ice out on the West Coast. But you can't throw a hat. Rick, I don't understand it. And it's my rant. And I have a feeling I'm going to revisit it again. But I'm just, it's really making me hot. It really is.
I enjoyed your rant. And it was rather timely because it was, I was actually able to get a lovely cherry lozenge for my arena cough that I seem to get at this time of the year after spending too much time in cold arenas. But I agree with everything you said. Absolutely everything you said. And poor John, I love John Liu.
And we do.
And
his
coverage is tremendous. And he was trying.
He was trying.
He was trying.
He was trying, and I give him credit for that, but it was just kind of the icing on the cake for me when I was like, no, let's have that kind of effort in another way, but not about a hat trick.
And you know, I understand that it's kind of the Quebec mentality. Government is the answer for the socialist mentality. And so let's put some rules to this. Let's organize this. But the whole business about a hat trick and tossing hats onto the ice is irrational. It is irrational. And being a fan, being a fanatic is irrational. Supporting a team after, you know, in the Leafs case, not having won anything since 67, the Canadiens since 90, it's irrational. Everything about sports is irrational. You're not supposed to apply logic to it and say, well, Quebec, you know, we're charitable giving. We're the lowest in North America, lowest percentage in North America. So we don't like to give things away. I mean, all of those arguments are just silly. And you know what? I will take some of, I'm endorsing you and I'm adding on to it. And I think it's silly. And I can't believe that one hat was one octopus on Saturday night. And I will take everything back when Jonathan Drouin gets a hat trick in the Bell Center and only one hat is tossed on the ice. But you know what?
Not going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen. So
rain hats.
There is a component to this that, you know, it's Paul Byron.
And we saw this
earlier in the season in Laval with the double hat trick, and you know, in that case it wasn't Dan Oddad, it wasn't, so we'll see how this plays out. Jonathan Drouin has some playing to do in the goal scoring department if he's going to have any consideration towards that. Let me just add that in. You know, it's not been what was advertised here. But I agree completely that this is Canadiens fans are supposed to be the ones that understand these traditions, that understand hockey better than anybody else, and should be taking the lead here. Very disappointing. And totally worthy of receiving a rant. So well done.
Thank you. And I will say, and I'm sorry, Habs fans, I know this is probably going to stick in the craw of some folks, but let me tell you what, I've been in the Wells Fargo Center for a hat trick. The ice is littered with hats when somebody in Wells Fargo Center scores a hat trick. And I'm, you know, you see it any night that there's a hat trick in the NHL. Got to be better. All right. We spent an enormous amount of time on the Rocket. And of course, I had a lengthy soapbox rant. So we're going to fly through our AHL news a little bit here so that we can get to our top. Oh, we have a good top five this week. Actually, it kind of goes along with the rant a little bit because, you know, technically a hat trick is a type of celebration for a goal. And our top five for this week is our top five goal celebrations. We're talking sellies and whatnot today. So that's coming up later in the show, but let's first get through some AHL news. We'll start with our monthly award winners for November from the league. I'm just going to kind of scoot right through these. And Rick, if you have anything that you'd like to comment on, feel free to jump in. So the AHL has announced for November, the CCM AHL Player of the Month is Jack Roslovic from the Manitoba Moose, who are just lighting up the Western Conference at every turn, because also the Goaltender of the Month is Michael Hutchinson from the Manitoba Moose as well. And the Rookie of the Month is Tucson Roadrunners forward Dylan Strome, who was a two-time Player of the Week award winner and has since been recalled up to Arizona. So he's doing pretty well for himself as well. So two Moose players and a guy who's now playing up in the show round out your monthly award winners in the AHL. Pretty good grouping there.
Absolutely. And Manitoba Moose again. Man, those guys, the Jets doing well at the NHL level, and the Moose are tearing it up in the AHL.
Well, and the CCM AHL Player of the Week is Manitoba Moose forward Nick Petan, who had 2 goals and 6 assists in 3 games last week. So the trend continues. They're apparently just taking over the league. If they keep this up, they're going to be a formidable opponent in the playoffs. Let's see here. With the good, we get the bad. Had some suspensions to announce within the last week. Guys were not as disciplined, apparently. Toronto Marlies forward Andreas Johnson has been suspended for 1 game for a boarding incident versus Hartford. The key thing about this, however, Marlies don't play, I don't think, until this weekend. And so his suspension will be served Friday night at Laval. So he will miss the first of the back-to-back in Laval on Friday night. Providence Bruins forward Adam Peyrel has been suspended for 1 game for a cross-checking incident, and Providence forward Chris Porter has been suspended for 1 game as a consequence of a boarding incident. And both of those penalties, those incidents occurred in a game versus Binghamton. And Chicago Wolves forward Scooter Vaughn has been suspended for 1 game. It was a game against Grand Rapids. Oh, he was assessed an instigator penalty, which means in the final 5 minutes of the third period, he was assessed a penalty for instigating, and that's an automatic 1-game suspension. Doesn't even get reviewed. It just happens automatically. And then last but not least, Bridgeport Sound Tigers forward Connor Jones was suspended for 3 games for a slew foot at Utica on December 1st. So he is not back on the ice again until after December 10th. So a few suspensions this past week, one of which will affect the Laval Rocket. We'll see how that works out for them. Standings, when we do the monthly award winners, we just like to take a quick look at the standings. The Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins still lead the Atlantic Division with a 13-5-1-1 record. In the North Division, the Marlies, of course, are at the top of the North Division with an 18-5-0 record. Laval is currently sitting out of a playoff position. They're fifth in the North Division. 10-9-3-2 is their current record with 24 games played. But they now have started their next potential winning streak. So we could see, and playing Binghamton this week and Toronto twice next week, those standings could change a bit. One last bit of AHL news, Rick, that I just wanted to touch on was something that I just happened to notice today too. Royce Sommer is the head coach of the San Jose Barracuda. And on Sunday evening, his team won 2-1 in Bakersfield, and he became the first head coach in AHL history to reach the 700 career regular season victories.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, pretty impressive. He's coached some of the guys he's coached: Logan Couture, Joe Pavelski, Thomas Hertl, Chris Tierney, Dan Boyle, Christian Ehrhoff, Josh Georges, Torrey Mitchell, Andrew Desjardins, Jamie McGinn, Tommy Wingles, Evgeny Nabokov, Chichu, Ryan Clough. I mean, it's got kind of a list of alums that he's coached. but has reached the 700 wins in the AHL. First head coach in AHL history to do that. So congratulations to Roy Sommer of the San Jose Barracuda.
I won't say it, but you already know how I feel about AHL records.
Yes, I do.
You have to be there a long time to set those records, and it says something about why you're there anyway, and not elsewhere. So congratulations.
So nice of you. My goodness.
Sorry.
Be nice. So congratulations to Roy Sommer's. My congratulation is sincere, but I think Rick's just getting warmed up for the next segment. You know, this is the portion of the show where if I needed a cherry throat lozenge, I would mute myself and go get one, because now it's time for Where Are They Now, or otherwise known as Journeys with Rick, as our friend Kathy likes to call it.
Well, you know what? We're not going to have one of those journeys today.
Oh, really?
Given that after that big buildup, given that we don't have a lot of time, as you said, we have a big top five to get to. And so I'm looking at the time on the clock and what I had planned might take a bit of time. So I'm just going to give you a couple of quick Where Are They Nows, and we'll just put that in.
So not
in our
so much a journey
here.
Today as more like just a trip around the block.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
That's interesting nonetheless, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Mr. Joel Hanley, defenseman for the St. John's Ice Caps last year. And just one of the nicest guys you meet in hockey.
Mm-hmm.
He's with Arizona, was up with the big club this year. Yesterday, he was placed on waivers and was not claimed. He cleared waivers today and was sent to Tucson. So he's back. Joel Hanley, former Canadiens defenseman, the Canadiens organization, is back in the AHL.
Boo. Looking at you, Arizona. Knock it off.
Bobby Farnham, and this was, I think this was reported in our headlines article. We have a once a week headlines article put together rather expertly by Joey Whalen.
Absolutely.
And a kind of a capsule. There's a lot of news during a week. If you miss something, if you need to catch up, Joe has everything you need to know. And we publish once a week on Mondays a headlines article. And in that, he noted that the Springfield Thunderbirds have signed Bobby Farnham to a standard AHL contract. Bobby Farnham, certainly a fan favorite in St. John. He's been a fan favorite wherever he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And we ran into him in Springfield when Lavelle was there and had a nice chat with him. And at that time, he was on a PTO. Well, Springfield has seen enough. They 16, 18 games. I don't know how many he's played, but into his PTO, they decided to sign him for the rest of the season to a standard AHL contract. So congratulations to Bobby Farnham.
Absolutely. Super glad to hear that. You know, Bobby's a really hard worker. And really has a lot of character. He's a good guy in the room, good team guy. And as you said, when we talked to him in Springfield, he was just excited to be playing hockey. Some folks may have seen him. He was invited to training camp with the New York Rangers, and so he played in some preseason games with New York, and did eventually get cut before the season started. So he had mentioned that there was a little bit of time there where he wasn't sure, you know, where he was going to land, and then got his PTO with Springfield. And so good for him that he has shown them the reason why they needed to keep him around for the rest of the season.
And not really a Where Are They Now, but more just a update on where current players are. And that's Zach Vukali, who went to the Brampton Beast in the ECHL on the weekend. Played in one game, and he has been returned to Laval Rocket, the dreaded three-headed goalie monster in Laval. But it's a difficult situation in Brampton with the Senators also supplying players. And so in order to make sure that, you know, everybody gets some playing time, he's been brought back, at least for now, to Laval.
Which means we now have a three-headed goaltending monster in Laval.
Right. Exactly. And I'm going to finish Where Are They Now with, speaking of fan favorites, in kind of the same way, you know, kind of the same way that Bobby Farnham was appreciated for his aggressive play, his standing up for teammates. You have Brandon Prust.
Prusty.
And Brandon Prust tried to sign on with a team this season. There were no takers. So a couple of days ago on his Instagram page, it was a great post. There he stood in his attire, and he said, "First day as coach. Exciting stuff."
Oh, wow.
The London Knights of the OHL. He's doing some he's doing now some work with them, and he's hung it up as a player, and he's now moved his career into the likes of coaching. And congratulations to Brandon Prust for that.
Well, good for him. I will miss watching him play. I liked watching Prusty play. He's a gritty guy out there. Some people didn't care for him, but hey, I'm a Philadelphia Flyers fan, so he plays the style of hockey I don't mind watching.
But you know he's going to be a player's coach. You know he's going to he's
going
to be able to connect, going to chat. He's going to talk to players about the things that that he sees and that they can understand in a way that they can understand it. It's smart move by London.
Absolutely, and he landed with a good team, so good for him.
And that's our quick trip around the block, as you put it. Where Are They Now for this week?
Those are all very good updates. We appreciate you keeping your finger on the pulse of former Habs and Ice Caps and Rocket and Bulldogs players and letting us know what they're doing. But of course, that brings us now to... That's right. It is time for the top five. And the top five this week, as we said, goal celebrations. And this, okay, so it could be a style of celly. It could be a particular player's signature celly, or it could be just in general a memorable celebration of a particular goal that was, you know, a big deal or something like that. So it's, I imagine that there's going to be "No" by Rick Stevens coming up momentarily here any minute with rules and regulations and exceptions and honorable mentions and so forth.
Would not want to disappoint. Indeed, we have a couple of honorable mentions, but before that, we do have rules and exclusions to get to.
Okay. Here we go.
Ready for the rules and exclusions?
Yes, please.
Number one, no Bruins. Nobody from the Boston Bruins. This is just a
These are Rick's
thing.
Rules for himself. I'm not saying I have anybody from the Bruins, but these are Rick's rules for himself.
Well, I mean, if you know, somebody, the Bobby Orr, the Airborne thing, great, yeah. Bobby was good, but sorry, no Bruins. And kind of related to that, are no celebrations on goals scored against the Canadians. So, you know, there was Lanny McDonald and Calgary, and no, it was scored against Patrick Roy, I think. And so that's no celebrations on goals scored against Canadians. Now, this one everybody should agree to. I imagine people would debate those first two, but let's all agree on this one. With respect to celebrations, no kissing.
Uh-huh.
Just no kissing. Thank you very much. The with Ziggy Palfy, Travis Green, the Pucker Up, the Kiss, the Islanders. No, it's not.
No.
No.
Let's not.
Thank you very much.
Let's not do that.
And just kind of a more recent addition, I guess you'd call it. There's going to be no Nicholas Deslauriers, whether he's celebrating a fight, whether he's celebrating a goal. I mean, even the in the French press, he was called a maniacal clown, and he has these wild, crazed eyes. And anyways, you won't see any Nicholas Deslauriers in my list. And so those are my rules and exclusions. Happy to get to the honorable mentions when you're ready.
You go right ahead. I don't have any honorable mentions this week.
Really?
I kept things right in order. I have a top five, and that's it.
Yikes. Okay. Well, the first one is just for sheer entertainment and cockiness, I guess you'd say. and that's Alexander Radulov. And, you know, it started back when he was with the Remparts. And he did he'd do a stick spin, and then he'd sheath the sword, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And yeah, I mean, it's just fun. It's just, and his enthusiastic way of doing it, is just kind of fun and just kind of a personal thing. And so I tossed him on my honorable mention. The other two honorable mentions are there just, I mean, to honor, I chose them because they're kind of the two most dominant players, of the past decade in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Alexander Ovechkin. When he scored his 50th a couple of years ago, he did that hot stick thing.
The stick on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, this might, I don't want to bring up bad memories. But in the 2010 Winter Olympics in Vancouver championship game, Canada versus USA, Sidney Crosby with the golden goal, throwing the gloves in the air. He got the pass from Iginla in tight, buried it. Canada wins gold, gloves in the air, golden goal call. So I felt that should be acknowledged and in the honorable mention category. And I'm sorry that it came against your Team USA.
Well, it's actually two strikes for you, because not only is that an against Team USA, but it was also scored by Sidney Crosby, who is my most probably hated player in the entire National Hockey League. Not
well,
for
we're
his
off
skill.
To a great start, aren't we?
Yeah. If I had to have an honorable mention, it'll be someone who, not one of my favorite players, and a bit theatrical with his sellies, but there was one PK Subban celebration that I did like. I can't remember which game it was, but huge goal. He did his typical one knee scoop the ice, and then just started skating full tilt at Carey Price, and Carey met him at the blue line, and they had a giant leaping chest bump in which Price and all of his gear just knocked Subban right on his butt on the ice. And it was probably my favorite PK Subban goal celebration. If I had to have an honorable mention, that would be it.
Do you want to start with number five?
Sure.
Of your top
five? Number five is kind of a joint, kind of a two for one. Alexander Ovechkin is in there, just his goal celebrations in general, especially during All-Star games. He comes up with the most ridiculous goal celebrations. And yes, the stick on fire was one of them. But joining him is a guy who for a lot of years I couldn't stand because he played for the Pittsburgh Penguins, but he's got an iconic goal celebration. And I can't deny the fact that the Jager salute has to be on a top five list. So that's my number five. It's a shared number five between Alexander Ovechkin and Jaromir Jagr.
Hmm. Well, for my number five, I have Jaromir Jagr.
Oh, come on. You cheated.
No, you cheated.
No, you cheated.
Listen, I thought that the top three goal scorers should be on the list somewhere. in NHL history. I have no idea how Gordie Howe celebrated, so I couldn't squeeze him in. But Jaromír Jágr, with the iconic salute, you know, for a guy who scored 765 goals, third all time in the NHL, he deserves to be on the list. And
absolutely.
And for
cheater.
Me, he made number five. Go ahead. Go ahead and list your number four and steal something else off my list.
I will, because I guarantee you it's showing up on your list somewhere. Number four is Teemu Selänne. Thank you very much. Because
oh,
there is
on.
Just... there is nothing like watching Teemu Selänne with that iconic up in the air, shoot it down. I know it's on your list somewhere, so I won't say anything more on it. I just, you know, got my teleporter out. Teemu Selänne, number four.
Well,
what
for
you
me,
got?
I have Tiger Williams. Back in the Vancouver days, the good old stick ride.
Jesus.
You know,
I hate
everybody,
the stick ride. Could we have like a top five of worst sellies? Because that would be on my list.
Oh, but everybody's done it. Yeah, everybody's done it.
Well,
at
exactly.
The, well, for those of us who can skate, just leave that there.
Don't even start.
Everybody's done it on the corner rink or the pond or whatever you've ridden a stick, and it was brought back by kind of reprised by Ty Domi.
Yeah.
He did it as well, and it's just fun. It's just fun.
It's just fun. Okay.
I don't really like gold celebrations, but that's kind of a fun one.
Hmm. Well, my number three isn't necessarily a celly. It's simply the celebration around a particular goal, and that would be the goal in which Wayne Gretzky broke Gordie Howe's goal scoring record.
Honestly,
and just I came up with this top five, so it means I formed my list first. Just the absolute pandemonium that erupted in that building, and the teammates and the opposing players and coaches, no one could deny what a big moment that was for Wayne Gretzky. And so he comes in at number three. I'm sure he's on your list somewhere, so I won't go into great length about it.
I'm going to start coming up with a list.
I didn't have Tiger Williams.
Number three, there it was, a game between the Chicago Blackhawks and the Montreal Canadiens that was tied at one going into overtime.
Uh-huh.
You may not have heard this story before.
Is that the game? Is this the soup? Go ahead.
There was a pass from Andre Kostitsyn.
Yes, there was.
To PK Subban, who one-timed it into the back of the net for the game winner.
And what happened after that?
What happened after that was that Subban skated from the Chicago end right back at Carey Price, who happened to have a pretty spectacular performance in that game. Subban pointed at Price. Then when he got close to him, he jumped for the body bump with Price. Price stood his ground, raised his forearms, and with Subban expecting the body bump, Carey just dropped him, just absolutely dropped him at the blue line.
That's right.
And stood there quite victoriously looking as the rest of the team caught up and mobbed both of them. But yes, for Carey Price just absolutely nailing PK Subban, he is my number three. And you had to throw that in as your honorable mention, didn't you?
I did. I did. Well, I can guarantee you don't have my number two anywhere on your list.
Is it violate one of my rules and exceptions? Is it kissing?
No. No. You mentioned as one of your rules and violations that there were to be no celebrations on goals against the Canadians.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone listening to this podcast knows that you meant the Montreal Canadiens, not the Canadian national team. And so this is goals scored against the Canadiens with an A. And that would be not the one, but the two World Junior Championship gold medals that the U.S. has scored and won against Canada in the last 7 years, the most probably glorious of which was the last one in 2017.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, actually the U.S., if you didn't know, has won the gold medal at the World Juniors three times since 2010. Canada's won once. In that time frame. you wouldn't, because it happened so infrequently in the last 7 years. I'm sorry, I'm not usually this evil when it comes to Team Canada. However, Canadians are always so dominant at the World Juniors. The fact that the U.S. has beaten Canada twice in the last handful of years, those victories, those guys just lost their ever-loving minds with each of those gold medals. And it was just being an American hockey fan and getting used to Canada always just kicking our butts up and down the ice. It was just really, I get chills every time I watch those replays and highlights from those World Junior wins, including the gold medal that they weren't playing Canada. I think, did they win it over Sweden in like 13-14? But just really always excited for the U.S. guys when they're showing the world that you know, the Americans have some talent.
Sorry, I was looking for another lozenge. I didn't quite hear what you said.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So who's your number two?
For number two, there was a game between the Kings and Canucks. And a pass from Marty McSorley to the middle of the ice.
Of all people, right? Of all people.
And yes, it was Wayne Gretzky scoring his 802nd goal, passing Gordie Howe to be the all-time goals leader. In the NHL, and Gretzky, he scored 894 goals. He wasn't known for his goal celebrations, but he did a little bit of a kind of a skip and a dance. probably as demonstrable as Gretzky gets after a goal. And so that's because of the event more than the celebration. Wayne Gretzky is second on my list.
Very nice.
And your number one?
My number one. We have a little bit of a theme going. You know, it's not always easy to be a hockey fan in the United States. You know, there's Canada dominates, Russia dominates, Sweden dominates. You know, there's a lot of countries that have a really storied history of being successful in this sport. And I'm just grateful that I'm around for this kind of really big growth that the U.S. is having with the game of hockey, and, you know, seeing guys coming out of California and Arizona and Florida who play the game and play it well, and how much it's spreading and growing in the U.S. But it means that up till this point, the big wins for the U.S. are a really, really big deal. I'm not diminishing any win that the Canadians ever have, because every win is a big one. But it's a really big deal in the U.S. when a big victory happens. And the most iconic one for me as an American hockey fan is, of course, the Miracle on Ice that happened in Lake Placid. And that just, there's just no question. That is my number one celebration of a goal and a game and a victory. Just absolutely incomparable as far as just what they managed to do and how they did it. And the fact that we have visited the Herb Brooks Arena on many occasions in the past, covering USA Hockey's World Junior Evaluation Camp up there and sat in the press box right next to where Al Michaels was making the call. And it's just a really, really special game, a really special celebration. And so that's my number one.
Nice event. Al Michaels.
Thanks.
And Ken Dryden. Ken Dryden.
That's right.
Color. I considered for my number one, I considered the 1972 Summit Series. But it just seemed, we're talking about goal celebrations, and it seemed it was bigger than that.
Yeah.
Much bigger than that. It was, you know, it changed the course of the Cold War between Russia and the West. So it was more than, and maybe I'm over dramatizing, but
might be exaggerating
it
a little bit.
It was more than that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to save that for another list. I'm sure we'll have opportunity. I'll have opportunity to get it in at some point later.
The top five hockey games that changed the
world.
The world.
The planet. The universe.
Uh-huh. Foreign relations.
But if we're talking about top five goal celebrations, and this is, to me, this is, you know, some of them I kind of, okay, let's throw that in. But this is the only one that matters to me. And it was Teemu Selänne's, been mentioned before, toss the glove, shoot it down. It was his 54th goal of his rookie year, breaking Mike Bossy's record. And he went on to completely rewrite the record book, 76 goals that year. But yeah, there was just, I was there, and I can guarantee you that most of us, had no idea what we saw. What is this? He shot up his glove and he shot it down. And you only began to appreciate it when you saw it in the replays later that night and the next day. Just how he was able to cement that moment, unlike anybody had ever done before, cement that moment in all of our minds and our memories of his achievement, which was remarkable, amazing. And that's a record, you know, Gretzky has records that will never be broken. Teemu Selänne, the 76 goals.
Oh, nobody's breaking that.
And his 54th goal on the way to that, it was a way of just cementing it in our memories forever.
So Teemu Selänne is your number one.
My number one for goal celebrations.
Well, we had a few that we it was looking like we were going to duplicate a lot, but we actually had a few that were different. So
true.
You know, you had Tiger Woods. Oh, wait, I mean, Tiger Woods.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I had Tiger Woods.
On purpose. Yes. You had Tiger Woods.
Got his driver out and he rode it around. The ice.
I would love to see that. Tiger was back this weekend, people. That'll be when I start my golf podcast. It's going to be all Tiger all the time. He's back.
I won't be the co-host on that one.
All right. Well, we want to hear your top five. Whose cellies do you like? What were the big moments in hockey history with big goal celebrations that really stand out to you? Tweet to us at the AHL Report on Twitter. You can also hit us up on Facebook. And let us know what your top five is. We'd love to share that on social media with other people and maybe, compare notes as Rick and I do every week. Sometimes our notes seem to be very similar. Sometimes they are polar opposites. So we'd love to keep that conversation going on Twitter, so be sure to hit us up there. Of course, coming up this week, we've got three games with Laval Rocket. It's a homestand for them, so they'll host Binghamton on tomorrow night, Wednesday, and then hosting a back-to-back with the Toronto Marlies Friday night and Saturday night. So we'll be sure next week to have all the updates on those games for you. Of course, be sure to also tune in and listen to our other podcast here at Rocket Sports Media. Outside of From the Press Box, we have Habs Unfiltered, and that's hosted by Blaine and Traig. I believe an episode of theirs just came out recently. And then, of course, on Saturdays, we have Habs 360 in its eighth season. And that is our Montreal Canadiens centric podcast hosted by Chris G and, of course, co-hosted by Rick Stevens. That goes live at 2 p.m. Eastern every Saturday afternoon. So be sure to listen and call in and join the conversation with Rick and Chris on Saturdays. Of course, hit us up on social media any time of the week. Whenever you have a question or would like to interact, you can find us, as I said, at the AHL Report on Twitter. You can find Rick on Twitter at AllHabs, and you can find me on Twitter at Flyers Rule. Of course, be sure to check out the Facebook page as well, and our Instagram accounts, especially after we've had a weekend away where we're covering Laval. We've got lots of exclusive photography from those games, so be sure to check that out. And of course, we'll see you right back here next Tuesday for another great edition of From the Press Box. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you right back here next week.